From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. During our last episode, I mentioned the threat of a government shutdown should Congress be unable to pass a temporary government funding bill that the president would be able to sign into law prior to the end of the fiscal year 2025, which happens to be September 30th. The legislation is known as a continuing resolution. I pointed out that the Postal Service would continue to function if Congress failed to pass the continuing resolution prior to the end of the fiscal year, since, as we all know, the Postal Service operates without taxpayer revenue because taxpayer revenue is subject to appropriations and the Postal Service does not receive appropriated money. Nevertheless, NAPS has a specific interest in this year's continuing resolution. NAPS has been outspoken throughout the summer regarding the July 2nd Office of Personnel Management Inspector General's report, which warned that DOGE-related reductions in force at the Office of Personnel Management, combined with government funding cuts, could leave the Postal Service Health Benefits Program in limbo for the 2025 open season, which begins next month. Indeed, because of NAPS's aggressive approach and the efforts of key members of the House and Senate, the White House Office of Management and Budget recommended that the continuing resolution contain a provision to reallocate Office of Personnel Management resources to administer effectively the Postal Service Health Benefits Plan. Moreover, it is reassuring that key members of Congress continue to vigilantly oversee the Office of Personnel Management operations relating to the Postal Service Health Benefits Program, and on September 12th, sent a letter to the Office of Personnel Management listing specific questions about plan administration with a requested response date of September 19th. Now let's turn our attention to this week's NAPS Chat guest, NAPS Secretary Treasurer Jimmy Warden. Jimmy is Secretary Treasurer and was past president of NAPS Branch 100 in New York, and he served about a decade as New York Area Vice President and has also served on the NAPS Executive Board's Legislative Committee. I should also mention that Jimmy and I hail from the same ancestral homeland in New York City, Washington Heights. Welcome back to NAPS Chat, Jimmy. It's been a long time.
Hey, Bob. How you doing today?
You know, Jimmy, among your primary roles at NAPS is managing finances and membership, two functions that are vitally intertwined. Could you talk a bit about membership recruitment and servicing members?
Sure, Bob. Membership recruitment, we're doing very well in recruitment. We have 270 branches nationwide. All those branches are our boots-on-the-ground recruitment resources, and they do a fantastic job. Our membership, I have to say, did drop a little bit over the last 3 months, but there was reason for that. A lot of folks took the retirement. They were a little nervous about not knowing what was going to happen with the big, beautiful bill. And going from a high 3 to a high 5, the supplement was going to be eliminated, going to possibly an at-will employee and being have to pay more into their retirement benefits and not get anything for it. A lot of folks, they just didn't want to take that chance. And it seems like they just decided to retire. They might have stayed on another year or two, but they did take their early retirement. They did decide to retire. And that was for personal reasons. And that's good for them that they did it. They made a personal choice. But that's why our membership kind of dropped. I'd say just roughly looking at the membership and non-membership numbers, probably dropped about 1,000 overall. But now it's all starting to pick back up again. We're only currently we're at 28,987 total membership for August. We're at 27,576 active members, and we're at 1,411 associate members. So our numbers are climbing back up there again as those positions get filled, vacated by the folks that decided to take the retirement.
So primarily, we are an active employee association. I mean, we're the overwhelming majority of our members are actively employed at the United States Postal Service.
That is correct.
For these folks that have made the decision, I mean, an overwhelming number of them, over 28,000 of them, decided to stay with the Postal Service and not be scared by congressional and administration attempts to gut retirement and other benefits. What has there been their response to NAPS's aggressive lobbying and advocacy on their behalf on Capitol Hill to protect those benefits?
Extremely happy. You and Chuck had sent out the QR codes. That goes over big time. Because let's face it, a lot of folks are that are actively working, they're still working today, they don't realize, or I don't want to say they don't have the time, but they don't really understand what's going on in the House and bills that come up. And this is where NAPS, as an association up here at NAPS headquarters, what we do is yourself and Chuck, who's oversees the legislative part, you're up to date on this, and you get that information out to the branches, which filters down to the membership. What happened with the retirements of those folks, being that bill, if it was signed, was going to take the very next day, they just didn't want to take that one-day chance because they would never get their paperwork in on time.
What we're talking about is sometimes lack of communication, not understanding what's going on. Those who pay attention, they're more comfortable with how we represent their views on Capitol Hill and so forth. And that is why our printed publications, NAPS, you know, the Postal Supervisor, our online presence, and our communications through our branches is so effective.
The email blast is big because what we do up here at NAPS headquarters, we don't wait for the magazine to come out to notify the membership. That's where we have those email blasts that you and Chuck had sent out on the legislation. This way it gets out there. As soon as we hear about it, we can get it out there.
Now, let's come back to membership for a moment. Why should a postal supervisor, manager, or postmaster join NAPS? After all, unlike a union, NAPS can't collectively bargain. What's left for NAPS to do?
Well, that's true. We don't have collective bargaining rights, but we do also consult on pay and benefits. Currently now we're in pay talks consulting with the Postal Service on future pay and benefits for the members. We have a fantastic DDF fund, Disciplinary Defense Fund. To the best of my knowledge, and anybody I ever spoke to that was down here as a resident officer, not one person that had to use the Disciplinary Defense Fund had to pay any out-of-pocket costs. NAPS does publicize that we cover up to $4,000, but there have been some times where a deposition may have to be taken, and if the cost runs over to $4,000, usually the three resident officers, Ivan, Chuck, and myself, will consult. It's always been approved. We didn't charge the member. We absorbed that cost here at NAPS headquarters. We represent corrective actions. We have training seminars across the country. We just had the Western Region training seminar, which was a fantastic success. You had 3 days of training. And it's not just training on being on advocacy. There's also a lot of the training seminars have postal officials that come, where you can learn a little bit more about what's going on in the Postal Service that you may not hear in your office. It also allows for good networking. I know, like I said, just in the Western Region, they had a training seminar. It was in San Diego, and the district manager and the postmaster of San Diego there. And after they spoke, they stuck around. They were speaking to people in the back of the room. There was good networking going on. And that helps build that relationship that we need to get things done. And as far as not being a collective bargaining, like a union or what have you, supervisors still have rights. We protect the management's rights stated under the ELM. Now, supervisors have a right to file a grievance. If you're not a supervisor, you cannot file a grievance, but you can file a letter of protest. So you still do have rights, even though, like I said, we're not a collective bargaining unit.
You mentioned that one of the primary responsibilities of NAPS is when we do pay consultations. And you referenced that we are just at the beginning part of pay talks. Could you talk a little bit about that, where we're at?
Pay talks are interesting. This is my first participation in pay talks. We had an extension. Our pay talks consultation was extended until Monday. I believe it may be extended a little bit further after that. what the Postal Service had offered us, two things. Basically, they offered to continue with PFP the way it is, and also offered to continue paying 72% share of the health benefits. We, in turn, gave our proposals to the Postal Service. Now, that was a little extensive because, don't forget, all the resolutions passed at the conventions in 21, 22, and 24 that had to deal with pay talks was added into our proposal. The third meeting we just had, which was about a week and a half ago, the Postal Service wanted some more confirmation on a little bit more clarification on what we're asking for and to kind of prioritize some of the issues. So far, everything is still on the table as of today. Two issues they did say a no to, which I guess it's okay to say. They disapproved. They will not extend or they will not allow an additional 40 hours of carryover for annual leave, and they will not allow an additional 40 hours of annual leave to be cashed in. And the reason they said so, because they just upgraded, they updated that about a few months ago to 40 hours, so they're not going to add another 40 hours on top of that. What was done prior is in effect, but they're not going to add another 40 for each.
Do you sense that our past challenge to the results of pay talks in the court system and our win, there is any way coloring today's pay talks?
Interesting question. Some say yes, some say no. The current lawsuit could be a little deterrent on what's happening now, because even I think both sides to a point would like to see, we're all anxiously waiting to see what comes out of this lawsuit. So I can see possibly where the Postal Service, if they wanted to offer something, they might wait and be a little apprehensive to see what the judge is going to decide.
But it's important to say that at the Court of Appeals level, we won. And so that the Postal Service is noticed that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District Circuit basically sided with NAPS in a prior litigation.
That's correct.
Let me shift gears a bit into legislation. You've been around for a goodly number of years, and you've established relationships with members of Congress. Could you talk a little bit about those relationships and how you, I wouldn't say cashed in on them, but how you use those relationships?
Good question. I don't know if you want to say cashed in on, but the key is building a relationship. When I was in New York, I've known Congresswoman Carol Maloney since she first ran. She first ran back in 1992. She ran against a fellow, I don't remember his first name. His
Bill
last
Green.
Name was Green.
Bill Green.
Bill Green was his first name. Bill Green wanted to totally privatize the Postal Service. So when Carolyn Maloney ran, she was always in favor of the Postal Service. So when she ran, we met with her back in 1992. We supported her on the local level. And actually, I was the manager of the station where her office was in New York and also her residence. So that's why we became very good friends over the years. Actually, I was invited when the Postal Reform Bill had passed a couple of years ago by Carolyn to speak at the press conference up in New York in front of FDR Station. Also with Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, we have a great relationship with. I also spoke at his press conference the next day, actually, in front of FDR Station up in New York when the bill was passed. To be honest with you, with our friendship, we had to put a little pressure on Chuck. You know, when he was in charge of the Senate, the bill was kind of sitting there. And we had to kind of get in touch with him and say, Chuck, all these years we supported you. Now we need you to support us. We need that bill to get to the floor. And Tommy Romo, rest his soul, he did the same thing. He also got in touch with Chuck and said, Chuck, come on, what is it here? So I think that's pushing Chuck a little bit to get that to the floor, because I don't think it was going to get to the floor at one point. There was more concern about appointing judges and what have you before the next administration came in. So, but Chuck, he listened to us, and we got that bill on the floor for a vote, and it did pass.
Interestingly, the New York area commands tremendous amount of influence on postal issues and legislative issues. I mean, you have Chuck Schumer, who's right now the Senate Minority Leader. He was formerly the Majority Leader. And the minority leader for the House of Representatives is Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn. So there's a tremendous amount of influence in the legislative space from your home area.
Correct. And we met a couple of times with Hakeem on Zoom meetings and what have you. And actually, the vice president of Brooklyn, Walter DeBerry, is a friend of his. He attends the same church as Hakeem Jeffries.
I wouldn't propose to enlist God into the discussion, but who knows?
You know me, Bob. You ask me the question, I'm going to give you the answer.
Now, you've been on the road recently. For example, you've been to California, Florida, Arizona. What have you been hearing from supervisors, managers, and postmasters out there?
Well, two of the questions that come up a lot is what's going on with the lawsuit? And the other one is how's pay talks going? But there seems to be really one common issue that I'm finding when I travel around the country, and that's people being treated with dignity and respect. Now, you can look at that in many different ways, of people just being instructed to do their job, and if they take an offense to that or what have you. But it seems like there's a lack of dignity and respect to get the job done. People are not speaking to people. They're talking at people. Lately, on Zoom meetings, telecons, and what have you. Now, we have spoken to postal headquarters numerous times about it, and it's not that it's coming out of postal headquarters, per se. It's when it gets down to that lower levels. A lot of the, I don't want to call them out, but PUMs and what have you, when they're having these meetings, some of the DMs around the country, they're not speaking the way they should be speaking. Speak, talk to people. Don't talk at people. Don't demean them. And that seems, we understand the frustration that's out there. Everybody wants to succeed. But there's a way of speaking with people where you can get things done a little bit better. And that's basically the real main thing concern around the country is just speaking with dignity and respect, treated properly.
One of the things that we've been hearing from the Postal Inspector General on Capitol Hill, Postal Regulatory Commission, and elsewhere, is in part this frustration that exists out there in the field is potentially the lack of adequate resources and adequate training for postal supervisors, managers, and postmasters out there, and also the lack of personnel for which to deliver the services. Do you hear that also?
We hear that also, yes. Training, in my opinion, is a big thing. People need to be trained. You need the tools to do the job. That's a big thing. When we talk about personnel, et cetera, then you have to look at employee availability. You have to look at things from both sides. The first thing usually when someone says, well, I don't have the personnel. I say, well, what's your employee availability? What is your sick leave? People have to come to work. And I know it's unfortunate I want to say this, but it seems like EAS sick leave is just as high as it is with the craft. And that's an issue. And I can understand the frustration by DMs, by postmasters and what have you. People basically need to come to work. If you're sick, you're sick. Yes, you stay home. But people have to come to work. That's a that's a big key. I mean, I got to stay neutral with that subject, with that topic, because you have to say, you have to keep it real. Let's put it that way.
Now, I referenced earlier in part of my introduction the threat, which we will hopefully avert, relating to the 2025 Postal Service Health Benefits Program open season. In your travels, are members, postal employees, conscious of that threat? And once alerted, what has been their reaction to it?
I don't think originally they were aware of it until Bob and you had sent out that information and what have you. Their reaction to it was like a deer in headlights, like what? We're going to be effective on open season. But I think what you had done and what Chuck had put in place, getting in touch with Senator Collins, she went to her committee, got the appropriations put in the right area to ensure that it was there. The membership contacting their senators and what have you, saying this is an issue. I believe all of that came together, and it's being proactive, NAPS being proactive, is what brought that to light. And I believe you have corrected the situation. The money has been appropriated, and open season should go smoothly.
We hope so. We remain skeptical. There's a healthy bit of skepticism amongst a lot of people, but we're in a better place than we were back in at the beginning of the summer, I believe.
Without a doubt.
Now, during the summer, and you referenced this, postal workers and retirees dodged a bullet regarding serious pay and retirement cuts. And you alluded to how we responded to the cuts through online presence, the use of flyers with QR codes, enabling our members to directly contact their House members and Senate members. Now that we've sort of, that's water under the bridge, do you think we're well equipped for the next battle that we're going to potentially face?
Without a doubt, because I believe the membership truly seen that their voice was heard. When they got in touch with their representatives, they received the letters back, and they seen an actual result that was in their favor. I believe from here going out, NAPS is going to be in the forefront of this, of any issues that come up, and I truly believe that the membership will be 1,000% behind it. And again, Bob, I have to take my hat off to you. I'm not, because you're sitting next to me, but the work that you've done and all the digging you do, I mean, by you getting in touch with the parliamentarian from the Senate, getting the Byrd rule to get those issues taken out of the bill, that was big. That was really big. And that's what the membership seen. They actually seen a result from all the hard work that done up here by you guys, you and Chuck at NAPS headquarters, and also by their voices being heard.
Next to last question. Earlier this week, you sat in on a candidate interview, someone who's running for Congress in California, against, and I'll say, Representative Daryl Issa, who has proven himself not to be a close friend of postal employees, the Postal Service, and the mailing community. What's your takeaway, not necessarily from this particular candidate, but the way in which we evaluate candidates who are seeking to run against incumbents?
I was very impressed. I mean, to have a candidate come down to NAPS headquarters, sit down with us, take the time, be questioned about where he stands on certain issues. That's a tremendous asset. You get a better feel for them. When you're sitting down like that, you get a better understanding. You're not doing it over a Zoom meeting. You can actually see their emotions, their body language, whether they're kind of telling you the truth or not, whether they're just playing off a script or what have you. I was very impressed with that.
Okay. With that being my final question, I would just want to ask you, do you have any final words for those who are listening here?
Well, the last time I was on the podcast, you asked me what my favorite bagel was. So I got to ask you, Bob, what is your favorite bagel?
Garlic.
I'll stick to the salt.
With a schmear of cream cheese.
With a schmear.
I want to thank NAPS Secretary Treasurer Jimmy Warden for joining us on this week's NAPS Chat. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Bob.
And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. Please share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
And make believe.